Hi, this is Michelangelo Badio, and you're listening to Focus on Metal.
Hey, Metalheads, Scott Thompson here, welcoming you to May. Not only that, but also the 232nd edition of Focus on Metal. Can you believe it? We're already all the way through April into May now, blazing our way straight towards summer. And we have got plenty of good stuff on the way for you. Hopefully, after last week's episode, a lot of you have gone out and picked up the brand new one by Pharmaco, self-titled one. Help support Joe Holmes in all of his guitar endeavors. And it's kind of been I guess it's going to be a guitar player three-peat this week. You know, that the week before last, we had Chris Impellitteri, followed that up with Joe Holmes. And this week, as you heard from the beginning of the show, we have returning guest Michelangelo Badio. I last talked to Michael about 2 years ago when he put out his last album, Intermezzo. And since then, he has signed on with Rat Pack Records, and Rat Pack decided to put out a brand new MAB release, more or less a compilation slash greatest hits package, and definitely good stuff in normal Rat Pack fashion. You can go up to ratpackrecords.com and see about any other packages that are available with, you know, t-shirts and picks and signed stuff. You can also get over to that album link at Rat Pack by going to focusonmetal.net. Right on our homepage, you'll find an ad for Michelangelo Badio's Shred Force One. Click on that. That'll bring you right over to Rat Pack. You can get all of your MAB goodness. And while you're doing that, you can listen to our interview with Michael. Also on tap this week, we have an interview with Richie Cavalera from the thrash band Insight. They recently released their brand new one. It's called Up in Hell. And Richie and the rest of the band have been out there supporting this album, touring their asses off. So be on the lookout for them coming to you. Definitely a hard-working band. And I was able to talk to Richie right before their show at Norfolk, Virginia. So two very cool interviews for you this week. But before that, in the words of Don Jameson, as he says it every week on That Metal Show, you know what time it is. Track of the week this week is from my buddies in Lords of the Trident. A while back, I had lead vocalist Fang von Rathenstein on the show. We had a great conversation all about the Lords, and they have just recently released their brand new one. It's called Frostburn. So another great release from the Lords, and they are out on tour. You can catch them if you want. A couple of dates coming up on the 22nd of this month. They are in Rio, Wisconsin. They're going to be headlining May Bash. On June 12th, they are in Madison, Wisconsin. They're playing with Zephaniah. If you remember, we've had Zephaniah on the show a few months back. And then on the 13th, they are in Appleton, Wisconsin, again with Zephaniah and Force Field. August 22nd, they are in Madison, Wisconsin. Once again, they are with Automaton. And then in November, they're back in Madison again. It's the Game Hole Con, and that's at the Alliance Energy Center. And they're always adding more tour dates as well. So you definitely want to keep up with them on their official website, lordsofthetrident.com, or on the ever-present Facebook. And that would be facebook.com/lordsofthetrident. So as I said, Frostburn, another great album from these guys. And they've been made a couple videos. They have a brand new video they have out. It's for their track called Light This City, and you probably can find that on YouTube. You can also find that on lordsofthetrident.com. And they're also talking about making a video for the track I'm going to play for you this week. That one is called Knights of Dragons Deep. So off the brand new one from Lords of the Trident, Frostburn, this is track number one. It's called Knights of Dragons Deep.
Across the frozen plains, passing petrifying remains.
There you go, a little Lords of the Trident track of the week here on Focus on Metal. And really, go support those guys. Head up to lordsofthetrident.com. You can get all their CDs up there. They got some great posters, great shirts. They got soap in their store. I mean, and it is kick-ass, totally metal-looking soap. Great stuff. If you ever wanted to get metal soap, that's the only place to go, lordsofthetrident.com. And definitely, if you have a chance to see these guys live, go see them. They're one of these bands that really invests a lot in their live show. It's not going to be like anything else you've seen before. So let's turn our attention to our first guest this week. That is returning guest Michelangelo Badio. Just put out this brand new one. It's called Shred Force One. It's on Rat Pack Records. Just some great tracks on here. Nice mix of stuff between original MAB material, some stuff that he did a long time ago, and then some really nice tribute compilations on here to Clapton, to Pantera, to Randy Rhoads, and just good stuff that's on here. And if you are unfamiliar with Michelangelo Badio's work, this is a good introduction to the guy. And obviously, if you go up onto YouTube and you search Michelangelo Badio, you'll see all kinds of crazy videos of this guy playing double neck guitars, you know, at the same time and all of that. But he's so much more than that, and it is great to have him on the show once again this week. We'll be right back.
happy to welcome back to the show Michelangelo Badio. We had him on the show way back in November of 2013 when he put out his last album, Intermezzo, and I am super psyched to have him back on this week and talking all about Shred Force One. How are we doing, Michael?
Oh, great, Scott. Yeah, I'm very happy. The timing of the record, with the way the record sounds, all the great guest stars on there, everything's rocking.
It is. You know, and it's amazing to me, too, that, you know, you've been releasing stuff out under your own name since 95, and yet every single time you put out an album, it's still an event. The amount of press coverage that you got off of this release, it feels really good that you're still getting that much positive response after all this time.
Thanks. Yeah, I'm grateful. And I think part of it is, you know, I just keep trying to, you know, I'm always, like I say, I'm always a student. I'm always trying to learn something new, and I'm very happy to do what I do. I love what I do, to tour and to make albums, and I always want to make a better record for the one that I'm going to do than the one I've released.
Yeah.
And so you always try to grow, always try to do new things.
Right. Yeah.
Stay metal.
And I know that last time we talked with the prior album, you know, you were talking about that as potentially being a bit of a coda, and that you were going to start to move and do some other new things. And is this just kind of a bookend to that, or is this just because of going to Rat Pack and wanting to put something out with those guys in relatively short order?
Well, I Joe O'Brien, the president of Rat Pack Records, is a great guy.
He's an awesome guy. Yeah.
Yeah, he really is. And we actually... He really didn't contact me, and I really didn't contact him. We were put together by a third party, and just everybody started talking. And it really wasn't something where I came to the label or he came to me and sought me out. It was something that just kind of, you know, for lack of a better word, it was organic.
Hmm.
It just worked out. I started talking to him. I really liked him, and we hit it off really well. And then he's got great artists on his roster.
Oh, yeah.
He does really well with them, and you know, he takes a really hands-on approach. They've got a great staff there at Rat Pack, and so one thing led to another, and then we started discussing. We almost re-released Intermezzo, you know, my last album, when I was on the show with you, that we were talking about. We almost released that through Rat Pack, and then Joe said, you know, it's already out there. Why? But, and then he said, he asked me if I'd ever done a greatest hits, or, you know, the MAB, the essential MAB album. And I said, no. And so we decided for the first album with Rat Pack to do that.
Hmm.
And then add some new additional tracks as well. And I can't be happier. I mean, he was very instrumental in picking the songs, him and the other people at the record company. I had my choices, of course, and he knew which ones definitely should be on there. But then some of the other cuts, I deferred it to Rat Pack, and it took a lot of pressure off me, because most artists never know what their best songs are. They never know. And even on Intermezzo, my last album, I didn't know the song Juggernaut would be one of the ones that people liked. I thought it would be the song Intermezzo, and I don't get that many comments on it, and it's a perfect example. So even though I think that's the best song on the album, the public speaks. And that's where I'm so happy with the way this album came out.
Yeah, I'm a little partial to Juggernaut as well, but that's also because Refit's a friend of mine. And one time when he was over here doing demos, he'd play me a little something. He was like, I have this thing, this riff in this thing. And then later on, I heard it in Juggernaut, and I was like, right on, Ref. So it's that one's I'm a little partial to.
Me too. I mean, Dave's a good friend. He's an awesome player.
Yeah.
He's gotten on. Yeah, and now he's getting a lot of publicity for this, and they put a third on the record.
Yeah.
See, again, I wouldn't have done that. That was Rat Pack's idea, but, you know, I'm just very pleased with the way Shred Force One came out, the whole idea of it.
Yeah, what I love about it is, you know, I talk to people about you and people that are unfamiliar with your music and stuff and try to explain what you do, and this is like the perfect album for me to give them and say, hey, listen to this, because it really does have all the great stuff that you've got. This great melodic stuff on here, like Rainforest, and then you've got the stuff with you playing against vocals and stuff, and it just seems like they really did a good job of doing this total perfect package for you.
I agree. If there is one album that, you know, give me one record of MAB, of Michelangelo Badio, to, you know, that sums him up, I think this is a good one.
Mm.
And it's a good introduction to what I do, and I'm very happy, and especially having all these great guest stars. I mean, for example, you know, on the tribute to Dime that we call Diamond, we couldn't, you know, ask for a better supporting cast. I've got the owner of Dean Guitars playing bass. He's a great bass player. Michael Wilden from Queensryche doing one of the solos, and he did a great job. And, you know, it's just song after song, you know, there's all these great guest stars, and they did a fantastic job on it.
Yeah, and I love that in the liner notes that you did notate who does all the solos, where in the song they come in and stuff, which is great, because like you said, I mean, you got some great guys on here. So, you know, even in Juggernaut, where you've got Ref on there, and but then you've also got Guthrie Govan, and you've got Chris Poland, and it's great to be able to listen
Michael
to the song.
Romeo.
Yeah. And I love the fact that that's all notated in there so that you can really see what everybody brings to the table for the songs.
Well, thanks, because, you know, I realize, too, you know, in this era of digital downloads, which is, you know, it's fine with me, but if you don't get the digital booklet, you can't give the information. A lot of new albums, you know, people don't even know who the producer is. They don't know who engineered it. They don't know where it was engineered unless you actually have the booklet.
Right.
And it tells you the info. And I thought, well, if people are going to get the CD, why not give them all the info? Because I want them to know when Mark Tremonti played a solo. I want them to know when Michael Romeo played or Dave Ruffett or you know, I just want people to know this is the artist. And then if somebody says, well, you know, who's this? Was that you playing? You know, I can say, well, no, but defer to the album liner notes.
Hmm.
And so I just wanted a lot of detailed information. It's something I would want if I bought an album like this.
Right. And what's great about having Rat Pack as your label is that they're really good about encouraging people to buy physical product because they put all those nice packages together. And every one that they put out, I end up buying one of the packages. I mean, they're just up the road from me. They're like our hometown label, but they've got great stuff, and I feel the need to support them all the time. So, you know, to get your CD, you know, signed, sticker, pick, nice album, booklet, you know, great sounding CD, and the price can't be beat. So it's a really good fit, you know, for artists like you that want to be able to provide people the information.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there was a time when being signed to multiple major labels, I have a working knowledge of how the major label record industry works. I mean, I was signed for multiple years, when I first started out and up even up to the 90s and mid 90s. And so when I started my own label, I had a lot of experience, and there was a time where I could devote a lot of time to my own records. And I realize now it's just, in this day and age, it's impossible. You know, I can't do what Rat Pack Records does.
Mm. Hello? Yep, I'm here.
Oh, sorry. I'm getting a call coming in.
I can't believe it.
Hey, can we stop this? Can I call you back?
Absolutely.
Okay, thanks.
All right.
So while we wait for Michael to call me back, let's take this opportunity to hear a little bit more off of Shred Force One. This is a great cover he performed of the classic Deep Purple cut Burn, with some great vocals turned in by Todd LaTorre, and also a great guitar solo in here as well from Mark Tremonti. This is certainly one of those tracks that you could overdo or do wrong or whatever, but I gotta say, he did this one just perfect. It's got all the classic elements from Purple in there, but it's got enough of everybody else's personality that's doing the cover as well.
Thank you.
So where were we? I apologize.
Oh, no problem. No. Yeah, so you were just talking about how with Rat Pack and how they're different than major labels.
Yeah, it got to the point for myself. I'm out touring and you know, constantly, and I realize it's just gotten over my head. I cannot run the label and do these things anymore. And that's why it's ironic, because my last album, Intermezzo, means between two major things. Mm. And so it's kind of like the end of one era and onto the next phase. And this is absolutely the next phase of it. So, and you know, I really like working with Joe and Rat Pack Records, and you know, they've signed some really great artists as well. So I'm in really good company on the label roster. And like you said, you know, he's great doing those pre-order, pre-release bundles and just all the cool things that he's able to do. It's really nice to work with somebody like him and that label.
Yeah. And he is absolutely a great guy. I mean, every time he sees us at shows, he remembers us. He's pulling papers out of his pockets. Oh, check out this new thing we're doing and all that. He's just, as a label owner, he's just so intense on the music and stuff, which is great to see someone who's that involved.
Yeah. And, you know, I've seen both sides. I've been on a major label when the label was really into it. And I've been on a major label when the music scene had changed within a couple of years and they weren't into it, even though we released a good album. And so I've seen, it's what gave me the knowledge to start my own company, but it's also that gave me the knowledge to realize I can't do it like this anymore.
Right.
You know, there's just too many things. And so, you know, I'm grateful and I think for a first album with Rat Pack, it's great. You know, I really like what they did, and I'm just pleased with the results.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Now, you know, obviously with a lot of these is you've got people that are contributing solos and stuff to the songs. Do you ever get stuff from folks that you have to go back to them and say, it's not quite what I was thinking, or do you just kind of pretty much let it just progress naturally?
Well, I have actually done that. I have told two artists, and I'm not going to mention their names. I told two of them in a nice way they have to redo their solos.
Hmm.
One of them did and delivered a great solo. One of them didn't and we're not friends anymore. So figure. And the ironic thing about the one that we're not friends anymore is I did a project with him many years ago, and I thought I delivered great tracks. And he told me that he wants me to redo it, and that he wants to be there. I actually had to fly to Europe to redo everything that was, in my opinion, greatly done in the first place, but I did it. And just to show, you know, they wanted to record me there and see me play, and I did it.
Right.
So when I said the same thing to him, he was insulted. And so, too bad. You know, I'm sorry.
But
it's my album, and if, you know, you're up against some of the greatest players on the planet, you have to step up.
Right.
And I did it not just for my sake. I want the best album possible. You know, I don't mix other guitars down. I don't EQ their tone. We you know, if you notice on this new album, and you know, ones before that I've had other guest artists, the solos are in your face. I want everybody to be the best they can be. It helps my album, but I'm not there to try and make myself look better than them. I want them to be the best that they can be, and I said it with that in mind. I was actually trying to help not only get a better record, but I wanted this person to have a better, I didn't want him to get slammed, you know, saying, well, you know, listen to these other great guitarists, and then this solo comes in and it's not all that great. But I did it for him. He didn't want to do it for me. That's it.
Yeah. And definitely no one can accuse you of placing yours top billing or anything. Eight Pillars of Steel, I mean, that's a great example, right? Where you've got a whole bunch of guys in front of you, and then you've got, you know, four other guys after you in that song as well, and you just slide it in the middle, and each one of those is great. You know, I mean, the difference between Rusty Cooley's tone and George Lynch's tone, and you get that feeling, you know, going from you to Rusty to George. I mean, it's all in there, and it's part of what I like about that song is the fact that you get those different moods in there.
Yeah, well, you know, when Dave Reffitt turned in a solo. And the one thing that was interesting about that song, Eight Pillars of Steel, is we all of us play to the same chord progression. And I also created that progression. I wrote it to have a lot of space, so that there's a lot of air so you can really hear what the guitarists are doing. I mean, all of it was on purpose. And I wanted to hear how each different guitarist would approach this particular solo section. So everybody had the same amount of space. Everybody, it's the same key. And it's amazing to me. But when I heard Dave's solo, to me, it's such a great solo that it just screamed that this should be the first one. Mm. And then Jeff Loomis turned his solo in, and I'm listening. You know, it's Arpeggio Madness, and it's awesome. And I thought, once I got everybody's solos, to me, it wasn't like everyone is equally as good. You know, they're all different. And I didn't want to put front loaded with George Lynch and then Craig Goldie. I didn't want it to seem like I put the best first. And in other words, it was an order of how good I thought they were. It's an order of how I thought the solo should flow. I thought one flowed into the other, that flowed into the other. And I sure wasn't going to put me first. I thought, like, for example, Rusty's, he just plays this blistering solo. And then he ends with the really kind of like expressive wah thing, and it goes right into George's solo perfectly. That's how I heard it, you know. And so it was just more of how do they flow rather than who's the best.
Right.
And, you know, I let the fans judge that. You know, some people like mine the best, some like Dave's the best, some like Jeff Loomis. There's always going to be someone that likes someone else better, and that's fine with me. That's why they're all there.
Yeah. This album, too, has got two really cool spots for me, like nostalgia-wise. One, just a little odd thing in having Byrne in here. And after Dave had been over doing demos a couple of times, and I was helping him with one of his guitars, and he was showing me his signature one. He goes, you know what? I've been over here. I'm playing through all your stuff. He's like, but I've never actually ever heard you play. He goes, play something. And the first thing I played for him was Byrne. So when I saw that you had Byrne on here, I thought, well, that was pretty cool. And the other one that's great that really brings back memories for me is that you put the Rush tune on here. What are you doing? Because I can remember, you know, back in, you know, the late 70s, early 80s, when we'd get together and we'd jam, we would invariably jam for hours on this song because it's that perfect, you know, jam song. Sometimes you would do it and go into Working Man and come back into this. But this song just, it always used to lend itself to being able to have a couple of people doing a nice solid rhythm, and everyone took turns soloing. And I just loved hearing this song again on your album.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, and I thought Todd LaTorre, you know, Queensryche's, you know, singer, he just killed
it. He did. Fantastic on it.
Really fantastic, yeah. And you know, it's an all-star cast. You know, here we have the drummer from TSO and Metal Church, and I'm involved, and Alice Cooper's bass player. I mean, it's an all-star, you know, Queensryche's vocalist. And I mean, it's an all-star cast, and everybody played great. And I wanted to, and what I did, some of the fast parts on there, I actually got the finished track because everybody put their parts together. And then when I got the track to put my solos over and my, you know, additional rhythm parts, you know, hearing the drum parts going, you know, he's playing some really fast stuff. So I thought it would be cool to match him on it.
Hmm.
And like to run, you know, because that's not something where I said, oh, I'm going to play fast. I thought the part, I wanted to play like that we had rehearsed this together, that it was like a drum and guitar, you know, kind of duet together.
Right.
And playing it, you know, and, you know, playing all those 16th notes. And I just thought it came out really cool. And like you said, it's a great jam song. I mean, it's a 1-4-5 progression. And if you hear the way I played it, I'm not playing stock pentatonics or the blues scale. You know, I play a little bluesy, but there's space. You know, I change keys when I hear the four chord. And, you know, I mean, I try to make it so it's bluesy, but it's not stock.
Right.
You know, if you actually had to figure it out and play it, you'd go, wow, there's little twists and turns that make it different, that don't make it a standard note choice of, you know, guitars that just want to blow through a blues scale, which there's nothing wrong with that, but I just wanted to make it different and take it up a notch. When I heard Todd's vocals, wow.
Yeah, I know. He does fantastic on that, and just an absolute great vocalist. I mean, he was great on the track on Burn, too. Awesome vocals on that as well.
I liked it, yeah. And he added that one, Never Learn. Well, you know, he added the little difference. And what I liked, too, is he kept the bridge part of it high, you know, the where Glenn Hughes sings, and I mean, just at the end of the song, I'm just really happy with the way it turned out, and he's a really cool guy too. He's a drummer first, you know, he really didn't start off being a lead singer. He just happened to have this great voice, and he happened to have the charisma to be a front man, but he's a drummer and he's a super cool dude.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I look at this and I can't imagine how hard it was to come up with this right balance of tracks. And it's just a perfect balance, but it's the fact that, you know, you've got so many of these other things in here with the slow hand on here and Diamond and Triple R and, you know, all those. And then as well as your tracks, and the fact that it isn't just filled with all of your stuff. It just, I don't know, it must have been incredibly hard to do it. But I just look at it and go, like, I'm almost like, this is how it had to be, was this way.
Well, thanks. And I have to give Rat Pack Records credit for that, because I gave Joe O'Brien my suggestions, and he's like, yeah, right, okay. And then he turned around, and you know, they don't know my discography, and they turned around and said, well, this is what we think. And I even gave them a song order. I would never have put Juggernaut third. I would never have started with Hands Without Shadows. In fact, I didn't even put Hands Without Shadows on the final, on my choices. And so, and again, it's what I thought was cool, and what I thought were some of the best things. Joe said, well, why don't we, in fact, the song Call to Arms, on that record, the oldest song on there is Call to Arms. And, I mean, that was written before any of my major label bands, and it was one of my early songs, but he listened to it, and he goes, man, that's a great riff. You'll Call to Arms.
Yeah, it is a great riff.
We should include it. And I thought, really? It's not one that I thought, but then I listened back, and, you know, I'm just really happy. They put the song order together. They chose some of the songs they thought were going to be the best for this album, and I'm really happy. It took a lot of pressure off me, and they were right.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely would have put Hands Without Shadows first, but what I thought was brilliant on their part was, rather than do like Hands Without Shadows and followed it up with something like Juggernaut, that they put something like Burn in between them. I thought that was a brilliant way of tracking this.
Yeah, and you know, it also, it made it, where this, it's a lot. For example, I'm getting a lot of more messages from women now. You know, I mean, they like to hear these vocal songs, and it's not that. And so it opens the door for the next album. I mean, somebody like Todd, I'd like to work with again, and you know, we hit it off really well, and you know, it's just it's just a different avenue, and yeah, I'm just pleased. I'm really pleased, and you know, he sang great. Everybody played great on their parts, and it's just you know, the rest will, you know, time will tell. But I'm very happy with the record.
Yeah. Now, I know that after the last one, that you guys have gone around and done a few clinics and things like that. Are you planning on doing some more of that stuff with this one, or are you going to try to maybe do some touring to go along with this, or any plans like that?
Well, I have already toured in 58 countries.
Yeah.
And it used to be at one time, the ratio was about 70% clinics. I mean, I did a lot of clinics in a year. I mean, you know, 70, 80, 90 clinics a year. Mm-hmm. And then I would add maybe 20 to 30% concerts, but it's completely flipped around. I'm only going to do maybe 30-something clinics this year, and I've got over 70 shows that I'm going to do that are concerts. This year alone, I started January 8th. I've been in 13 countries. We did an 11-country, 26-city tour in Europe this year, concerts. I did a concert in Israel. I played already in L.A., Chicago, New York, and I'm going to L.A. again next week to play concerts. And so that's the idea, to tour the entire year supporting Shred Force One. And I started even before the record came out, doing a few songs from the album, and it's going to continue. So that's really what I do. I'm on a tour, and then in the meantime, compile song ideas and get everything ready. Then when I'm off the road, usually it's around Christmas time, then I'm going to start working on a new album.
Awesome. And of course, you know, anyone that's followed you know that you've been a longtime Dean player. I love the fact that on the back of the booklet you're listing all the current models that you're using and stuff like that. What is it that continues to attract you to the Dean brand?
Well, Elliot, the owner of Dean, is on two songs on the album. He's on Eight Pillars of Steel, and he's on Dime, the tribute to Dime. And he knew Dime well. I did. Dime studied my instructional video and told me that's how we met him. I met him when Cowboys from Hell first came out, and they were still unknown. And he's telling me, you know, I'm like his guitar teacher, you know, because he studied my stuff. And so the owner of Dean is not a good bass player. He is a great bass player, and he just happens to be a great CEO and a great person. He cares about the quality of the instruments. And every person I work with at Dean Guitars is a player, and it's just a really great company. And you know, they're one of the biggest, they're one of the top 10. And Elliot doesn't need to be everywhere in the U.S. That's the thing. You know, it's really changed a lot here with the market and smaller music stores, and you know, dealing with GC. We're everywhere we need to be in the U.S., but we're everywhere on the planet. And that's biggest. I mean, Dean is a global company. You know, you go to China, there's Dean Guitars. I can go to Indonesia, and there's Dean Guitars. And so, and it's you know, it's a credit to Elliot. And also, you know, I'm partly responsible for that because I tour everywhere. And whether you can do clinics outside the U.S. and draw thousands of people. It's a lot different because it becomes a major event. You know, when you're playing in some of these places versus the United States, when there's, you know, a hockey game, you know, baseball game, you know, the basketball playoffs, and three concerts. And so but now I'm focused primarily on concerts, and primarily, you know, the focus is to add as many songs as I can with Shred Force One, you know, as being the main promotional thing, that tool that I use in concerts.
And of course, you know, you talk about, you know, the cables that you use and the cabs and picks, but one thing I notice that isn't on the list is strings. So what are you using for strings nowadays?
Well, I used to use Ernie Ball, but I'm actually going to have my own signature line. In fact, that's one of the meetings I'm having in LA next week, and I can announce all these things, but it's a pretty good company. It's a really good company, and I'm going to have signature cables, strings, picks, all sorts of things, and it's all, you know, it's all kind of been the culmination of, after that Intermezzo album, you know, going with Rat Pack Records, you know, I just switched a lot of things in the way I thought about where the next phase of my career is going. And yeah. Even with the concerts versus clinics, I mean, I have a really good multimedia concert show, and it's now all clicking, and I'm gonna have all these products coming out, and you know, they're my, you know, I have to supervise it. It's quality control,
right?
You know, it's one of the reasons, you know, I love Dean. I mean, they have quality control, and I want to have the same thing.
Yeah, definitely, and yeah, that's, I think another thing that's cool about Dean too is that they do make, you know, a lot of different models as well. So they've got a lot of the stuff that you're using, but then you also have things they make like the Soltero and stuff as well, and the stuff that Leslie West plays. So they're pretty broad in what they do, and they do seem to have a you know, be able to focus individually on every single project, which is pretty cool for a company that is their size.
And they have some really big international bands. For example, Arch Enemy.
Right.
Huge, you know. I mean, they might not be Metallica here in the United States, but they can sell out. You know, when they play a venue, they pretty much sell out everywhere. And you know, the main guitarist, Michael Amott, and now Jeff Loomis, but he doesn't play Dean, but Michael Amott does.
Mm.
And you know, people like Michael Schenker, and you know, they have iconic people, and they have bands that are very current and very valid, in today's metal scene. So. It's I can't be happier. You know, I've known Elliot for a long time, and I actually did a clinic. One of the first clinics I ever did in my life was in Florida. I lived in L.A., and this company just asked. They go, Michael, can you do a clinic? I go, well, what's a clinic? You know, what is it? You know, I mean, I know the name, but what exactly do you do in one of these things? I'd never done one. And he owned a chain of stores called Thoroughbred Music, the owner of Dean Guitars.
Yeah.
And my first four clinics I did four clinics in Florida. And the funny thing, it was great. I looked so rocked out back then. I mean, see, back then it was there was L.A. and everywhere else.
That's right.
And you know, and I mean, you know, yeah, Bon Jovi and everybody came from you know some of the East Coast, but really the scene in rock in the 80s was Los Angeles. That was the music mecca, and there was no internet. So unless you lived there, I didn't even realize how far ahead of. Like I remember coming back to Chicago. Over around Christmas to visit my parents, and I went to a local rock club, and I almost started laughing because, you know, it was like, is this really the scene? And it's not that I was so much better. I looked like an alien compared to them.
Right.
I was so totally L.A. And I remember I walked into this music store in Florida. I got a standing ovation just because I looked so wild. and I mean, I didn't even play a note. And that's when I first met Elliot, when I did one of the four clinics was at Thoroughbred. And I met him and I said, man, this dude is cool. He's just a cool guy. You know, for an owner of a chain of stores, you know, I just really liked him. And then it was, you know, years later that you know, when he bought, a few years later when he bought Dean Guitars, and turning it into the global company. And then now, you know, I've worked with Dean for a long time and I love it.
Yeah. It's funny you talk about the whole thing about this LA and everywhere else, because, you know, on the back, you know, you thank Doug Marks, you know, and Metal Method. And I can remember the early ad for Metal Method and you had a picture of Doug and it says something like, don't hate me because I'm pretty. And he took so much heat for that.
Don't hate me because I'm beautiful.
Yeah, that's it. And then a few years later, it was like every band was like that. And they totally forgot about the fact of how much they used to bash on Doug for it.
Well, yeah. I mean, but Doug was the first.
Yeah.
He was the first company to put out these instructional programs. I still work with them.
Yeah.
I
mean, somewhere around the house, I've got the Metal Method CD somewhere around here. Yeah, they were great.
Yeah, well, I mean, he had that band Hawk for a while. He had the bass player in Bullet Boys, mm-hmm. The drummer Matt from Guns N' Roses. Those are two band members. That was L.A. See, that's the thing. It was just so cutting edge back then that, you know, everybody else around was playing catch up. And if you were in a signed band and you came to L.A., you had to record out in L.A. You know, most of the bands recorded there or maybe New York. But if you didn't live in L.A. at that time, you spent a lot of time there because you had to. The record companies were there. You know, it was just so different than it is today. You can be anywhere today. The internet has leveled the playing field. You can see, you know, people have access. You know, just go on YouTube. You can type in anything and find anything out about anything. And it just wasn't like that. I didn't even realize I had changed my look so drastically, and because I just hung out with people who looked the way they did and played the way they do. It was intense. The guitar playing, the caliber of musicianship, I mean, local scene, Paul Gilbert, Tony McAlpine, Yngwie lived locally. You know, you had the best of the best. You know, you could go see Alan Holdsworth, you know, once a week at the Baked Potato or maybe at the Roxy. And it was just such an immense, cool time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But those times are not there anymore. And it's nice to look back. But you know, for me, it's, you know, with this new release, this is the starting of the beginning of the rest of the career, which I'm really looking forward to as well.
Yeah, I am too. I'm definitely looking forward to see what comes out next from you. And I mean, I've loved everything else that you've done up to this point. And again, what I really love about this album is that as I talk to people about you, and people always come to me and ask me about playing guitar and about people they should listen to and you know, who's this guy and that guy. And you know, I've talked about you to a lot of different people. And again, a lot of times they go on to YouTube. Instantly, they go to one of the videos with you doing the two-neck guitar and stuff. And they just focus in on that aspect of you. But this gives a nice, well-rounded view of what Michelangelo Badio was all about. And I love this album for that aspect.
Yeah, thanks. And you know, when it comes to the double guitar, because it's such an eye-catching thing, you know, people who don't know about me think that's all I do. And that's 7 minutes a night out of a 90-minute show.
Right.
And so it's only the encore That's it. And so it's a live vehicle, but I really love playing it. And I don't mind that people sometimes don't understand it, you know, and then, you know, if they delve a little deeper, then they realize, you know, yes, I do play one guitar for the majority of the evening and then end with a double. And you know, it's the showstopper, so to speak. But I enjoy playing it. People like it. And it gets me a lot of shows.
Absolutely. No, I mean, it's great. It's nice that this lets people know that there's so much more to what you do. And hopefully people will start to that pick this up as maybe their first experience with you, will dig back and find out all the other great albums that you've been putting out since 95.
Great. Well, thanks, Scott. I really appreciate it.
It's been great to talk to you again. And I couldn't believe that it's been since 2013 that we talked. I feel like we just talked yesterday, but always love having you on the show. And, you know, when Kevin gave us the opportunity, I certainly jumped at having you back on again.
Cool. Thanks. I really appreciate it.
Awesome, Michael. Well, have a good rest of the night. And hopefully if your tour winds through Boston, we can meet up and enjoy some music.
Sounds good. Thanks, Scott.
All right,
talk
Michael.
To you later.
Bye.
Bye.
There you go, my talk with the one and only Michael Angelo Badio. And of course, go up to ratpackrecords.com and pick up Shred Force 1. All right, and before we go on to our next guest, I just kind of want to point out a little bit about the audio quality on that interview as well. The fact that it sounded like I was in the bottom of a tin can talking was driving me crazy. And since I recorded that, I've done a whole bunch of experimenting with stuff here in the studio as well, thinking that maybe something had gone awry in the racks here somewhere. And after a whole bunch of looking at stuff, I realize it's Skype that's doing it to me, because obviously everything sounds fine right now the way I'm talking. And this is the same studio rig that I use to do all the interviews. The only thing is that we're using Skype instead. So something in Skype is introducing that really bad echo. Now, I do all my audio processing on a Mac workstation, so I don't know about the Windows side, but I had heard rumors that there is some type of setting on the Windows version of Skype that helps you to mitigate that echo sound, but I can tell you that the Mac version doesn't have that, unfortunately. So I don't know what happened with Skype, but the output sound quality is really starting to let me down. So with that diatribe out of the way, why don't I switch over to a guy who really knows how to give a diatribe. I'm talking about Richie Cavalera. This guy is the founder and vocalist of the thrash band Insight. They just put out their third full-length release. It's called Up in Hell. And these guys are an extremely hard-working band. They are moving up in the metal ranks. They've toured along with Dillinger Escape Plan. They've been out with Soulfly, Throwdown, The Cavalera Conspiracy, and a whole bunch of other bands. And they are just making waves everywhere they go. They were on the top 40 metal charts on Sirius with the Army of Darkness. They ended up at number 10 on Liquid Metal with the track called The Aftermath. And then Revolver also named their last one, All Out War, its album of the week upon its release. So definitely these guys are paying their dues and they're doing it right. They're out there touring their asses off, bringing the music to the people. And we have them right here this week on Focus on Metal.
Hey, what's up? This is Richie Cavalera of Insight, and you're listening to Focus on Metal.
All right, guys, got another great band for you this week. That is the one and only Insight. Just put out their third full-length recording. It's called Up in Hell. And I have on the line with me today the man behind all the voice. That is Richie Cavalera. How we doing?
I'm doing good. What's up, Focus on Metal tonight? How we doing? I hope everybody's good out there jamming, throwing the horns up.
Awesome. Of course, we'll get the one thing out right out of the way if anyone's trying to figure it out. Yes, he is one of those Cavaleras. So there, we've gotten that out of the way. We can move on.
Perfect. Thank you, man. Thank you. That was one of the best ways I've ever heard it done. That was killer.
Awesome. So, you know, obviously, great new album out. One thing I love about the new album is the fact that in that true, like, classic thrash vein, there's no long songs on here. There's nothing over 5 minutes. I gotta love that.
Yeah, you know, we had that kind of style on our first record, you know, but we had a couple long ones. And then, you know, the second record came around, we kind of experimented a little bit into the longer songs and realized that we, you know, totally fucked up. So we went back to the drawing board, and with, you know, the new drummer and bass player with the huge thrash backgrounds that they share with me and the guitar player, you know, it made this record focus on that kind of feel, because that's what we grew up on. That's what we listened to and loved as a kid, you know, so it was what we wanted to define the sound, as well as mixing the kind of the groove vibe that you get to it, where, you know, your head can bob during the choruses and then it slams back into the verse, you know, where it's real raging and real thrashy and keeping the people, you know, just into it for, you know, the moment it goes. And each song, you know, I think not being so long makes it more impacting on the listener as well.
Yeah, I definitely think so. And of course, I'm glad you brought up everybody else in the band. The fact that you did something pretty remarkable that, you know, here, three releases in, you basically changed out all your personnel and brought in all new people as well, which is a pretty ballsy move.
Yeah, it was quite a, you know, it's not what I wanted to have happen, you know, but, you know, first the bass player, you know, hit me up and expressed that, you know, he had personal issues that he wanted to leave for. And, you know, the drummer did so, you know, a couple months later, I think after the bass player left, it was kind of what he was going to do as well. So, you know, it, for me, it was an exciting time though, you know, because I had these great players in mind that I wanted to play with and went out and found them. And, you know, to have the guys on the same page, we're all on the same, you know, same ideas when it comes to our music, and we're putting the love for it, you know, into this band that we've all learned from our previous bands and previous mistakes that we made. And, you know, they came to Insight and really took us to the next level. You know, I think Lennon on drums is just a monster. L on bass is a beast. And, you know, Drew Tang on guitars is just phenomenal. And I think I've never been happier playing on stage or playing music than I have been with these guys right now. So it's great.
That's very nice. And
I lucked out.
Yeah, I mean, not everybody can say that. And the other cool part about this thing is that, you know, you did this East Coast, West Coast thing as well when you started with the writing process, which, again, to have songs that sound this tight coming out of that initial starting process, that's pretty amazing, too.
Yeah, you know, the big thing was, you know, keeping on as a writer was Kevin McAllister. He, you know, wrote the first two records and wrote all of Up in Hell as far as, you know, the guitar riffs and everything goes. So it was huge to have him stay on as a writer, you know, and I think we'll do that for the future as well, because he's been a part of the band, but, you know, he had a son and needs to stay home and take care of him, and it's understandable. So, you know, you always have, I think, that same core of Insight, which is great with me and him. And, you know, these guys are going to just bring us into the next level, and it's just been a dream come true. And working, you know, away from each other and over the internet, I think made it a lot easier. You know, the previous ones, we were always rocked up in a, you know, a jam room and just told, you know, you got 3 hours to make these songs. And you always felt rushed and never really happy. And when we did this, you know, you get it at home and relax on it for a couple hours and maybe think of something later in the day that works good for the music that was sent over. And, you know, everybody really just got to work at their own pace and in their own environment. And it's really worked out. I imagine that's how we'll probably do the next one as well.
Well, I mean, there is something to be said, you know, there's the pros and cons, right, of working over the internet. But definitely one of the things I know from my own personal experience is that when you're cooped up and you're on the clock and stuff, you just don't get as good a result as if you can can relax.
Completely.
Yeah. And of course, you listen to the songs and go, wow, they were relaxed doing these, but, just so much energy behind them. Now, the other cool thing I like about these is that you can tell that you guys really have this cool social consciousness going that, these aren't just like bullshit songs that are just thrown out with, themes you guys make up that, everything has got different things that, you're watching the news, reading the papers and going, I'm sick of this shit. And you're putting out these songs that really have this kind of social conscience to them.
Oh, completely. That this album and the other two as well, are huge on that. I'm huge into the world. I've traveled. I've seen everything. And I have shitty days. I have bills. I have relationship problems just like everyone else. And I've been so sick of hearing music where it's just this fantasy life of perfectness and, let's forget all the problems and just dance or, talking about just, Satan or, killing. And it really made no sense in what music's supposed to be about. Music is about relating and giving people that feeling when they hear it to go, I feel the same, and that's what I wanted with this record, from the album cover to the song titles to the lyrics to everything about it to the videos we put out. I wanted it to pay attention to the world, what's going on, how fucked up things really are, how good things could be, and just what the fuck, like that song is just the perfect definition of it because, no one's perfect. People make mistakes and I'm just sick of seeing this hypocritical world where everybody just bags on everybody just because they messed up or made a mistake, when all these other people that are bagging on them have just as bad as skeletons in their closet. And, it's gotten to a point where the world just become really crazy and I want it up in hell to really expose that feeling for it.
Yeah. Now, and the other thing I like about it too is that you can hear some of your other influences come up in the songs, especially like Fallen. I can really hear this early Sabbath influence in that song. And it's cool for me because I'm hearing that influence and also realizing that in those early albums, Sabbath had that same thing. They were really singing about how shitty things were and making people realize life isn't all happy and stuff. And so I saw a really cool connection with that song between Insight in a classic band like Sabbath.
Definitely. And that song, the riffs on that were actually done by, our bass player L, and he is a huge fan of, that era of time as well as all of us. I mean, metal comes from Sabbath. They are why we do what we do today, no doubt about it. And, to feel like that and to know what they were going through and to put it down and have it feel the same is what it's all about. Because, like I said, life is not peachy and it's not perfect. And I think people need to kind of wake up a little bit and notice that there's some shit going on that you might want to pay attention to, that I think is very important for our futures.
Yeah. And another thing that I thought was really different about this album is that, a lot of bands that, they're trying to go heavy and they, I don't know, they just don't quite get the whole, like how things should sound or whatever. And
yeah, like the live feel on an album.
You guys kind of have this really cool mid-range thing that's in there that it just makes everything hit you in the face that much more between, between your vocals and the guitars and stuff, where I think a lot of people that would have tried to do these songs would have been tuning way the hell down. And I think it just would have lost the impact. But you guys just have this
the tone you put in there is just perfect for the impact you want to have.
Yeah, we definitely focus on, you know, tuning and things like that, and guitar tone. You know, our man, Drew and Dis, they're both very, tough when it comes to their sound and what they do. And, you know, we've always went with, you know, C or D. We don't really like that, you know, chuggy corn, you know, even soul fly type of, you know, tuning in our music. It's the early thrash, and that's where we get that feel from having a higher tuning. And, you know, it works with what we do, and it works, like you said, it meshes well with the vocal sound and style that I put out, and each member's playing ability. You know, I think it just kind of suits what we're all comfortable with doing, and it works great for us. And Matt Hyde, obviously, you know, had a huge doing of this. You know, he was just a dream come true to work with. I mean, he's a legend, you know, a Grammy winner, is, you know, really one of the top producers out there. And to have the honor to work with someone like him, to get his hands on a young band like us, and really show us a lot of things that we never even thought about or attempted to try, or, you know, really just pushed us as far as we could go, and at the same time congratulating you, you know. So you felt a great bond with him in the studio, and I wish every band could work with him, because he really could help every band in the world out get to where they're looking to get to.
Yeah, you know, I think it's always a really important thing, too, to have someone like that you work with. You know, you see some of the bands that, like, go down to Florida and they work with Jason Suecof, and they come away with, like, that same thing of, like, oh, you know, you guys got to go down and work with this guy. And it's somebody that I think listens and understands and doesn't just try to go, oh, I know about everything, and I'm just going to put a stamp on your stuff and you're going to like it or whatever. But, you know, definitely this sounds like something
exactly.
Where, you know, he knew how to work with you guys. And I mean, the end product is, you know, speaks volumes for that.
Oh yeah. He was just a magician, man. I mean, he's just a miracle. Like, I was, every day we got to the studio, it was just a big smile on all of our faces, because we were just so excited for what, you know, the day was going to bring. Like, for example, the chorus on Rise to Greatness, we had nothing for it. You know, I walked in and sat with Matt for a little bit. We listened to it over and over. And, you know, I had a couple words I had thought about, and he's like, yo, you know, go in there and try it like this, and, you know, to do it and then come out and hear it. And we're just high fiving, and it's just like, oh, it's so awesome. And, you know, just improvising on the spot and connecting with someone outside of the band, you know, that can really help and have a different ear to put into it. Because every band thinks everything they do is perfect and great. So when you have someone to bring you down or bring you up when it is right, you know, that's just huge. And you can't beat that kind of, knowledge in the studio.
Yeah. And definitely you guys were working in a cool studio as well. And I know one of the things with Hideaway is they've got some great gear sitting around there as well. And did you guys get into any of that?
The guitar players are freaking, man. I mean, he pulls out like Les Pauls from like the 50s and, you know, 60s and just everything, that, you know, the old basses and, you know, all the little gadgets. And, oh man, it was amazing to just sit down and see what he does, because it's a special place. And, you know, I know, you know, he's working with the Deftones now, and just did Max's album for Soulfly. And, you know, he's just hands down one of the best there is, man.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely cool that, you know, when you have all the gear, but you have a guy that also knows, like, hey, maybe you should just do this one little part with that, and you try it out and you're like, holy shit, he's dead on. And that's great, as opposed to let's just smear all this vintage gear everywhere just because we can, kind of a thing. You know?
Yeah. No, he pulled out, and it was for a reason. That was what was so cool about it. You know,
yeah.
Like, this thing right here is going to work perfect on this spot. You know, it was like, oh, hell yeah. You know, just things we would never think about or attempt to try. It was great.
Yeah. So obviously, you know, you guys in truth, thrash old school fashion, you guys are out on the road and hitting the boards and tearing up audiences. So how long is this tour going for?
Man, this is a seven almost 8 week tour. We're at the halfway point last night, and you know, it's been a killer experience. We got Spades and Blaze and Better Left Unsaid. They've been killer, man. Great friends, great bands that are developing and growing as well, you know. And it's just been a cool experience. 43 shows in 48 days across the whole country. We did Europe before this, 18 shows across, you know, Germany and the UK and everything, you know, that we've always dreamt of and worked our asses off for, you know, coming true. And it's really just an exciting time for us right now. You know, we have a big tour coming up after this one as well. And it's been nuts. I mean, we still have Texas and Arizona to end the tour at, which is going to be amazing for us. The hometown crowd, last show of 61 shows and, you know, 72 days. It's just going to be a phenomenal experience. And what a great run it's been. I just can't express how fun it's been, because this is what you want to do. You want to play and you want to be in front of crowds and play your music, man. It's just been what we've been able to do.
You listen to this stuff, and I mean, that's what it's made for, right? I mean, it's made to play live and be able to interact with that crowd and watch them get fired up, which makes you fired up, and, you know, kind of have that cycle.
Yeah.
So for people that want to know, okay, you know, is Insight coming near me, and where's the best place on the web for them to go to find out all your tour dates?
The two I would always go to is definitely, you know, facebook.com/insightband. That is always up to date. I'm on there every day posting pictures, you know, tour information, the city that we're playing that night. You know, definitely the best spot. But, you know, we're on Spotify. We're on Last FM. We're on Reverb Nation. We're on iTunes. I mean, the band is everywhere. It's YouTube. You know, you want to find us, you know, you just go to Google, type Insight, and everything's going to pop up about what you want to know about us, because we're socially active. You know, that's the future. And we've definitely been on that since day one, and it's helped the band immensely. And we really want people to keep supporting and checking it out. So
definitely you guys come across as a band that's like that people's band down in the trenches doing it. And I'm glad to see that you guys are getting the success you deserve.
Hey, thank you so much, man. It's, you know, with the help of, you know, you and everybody else, man, that's out there pumping it and telling people about it. And, you know, we couldn't do it by ourselves. You know, it takes a whole team of people, and, you know, we thank you for the support and everything you've done.
So of course, you know, I want to round it out and let you choose a track off the album for us to roll to give everybody a good old taste of Insight. So if you had to pick a track to roll, what would it be?
I would go False Flag.
There you go.
I think live, album, everything. It's just, it's intense. It's perfect Insight. If you want to know what we're all about, that song right there, we'll let you know what it's about.
There we go. So chosen from Richie, and of course, great song, False Flag, talking all about government conspiracies, and God knows we got enough of those. So there we go. All right, man. Well, it's been great to talk to you. Hopefully I'll be able to catch you out on tour. We can kick back and have a beer. And in the meantime, wish you guys best of luck, and thanks for talking to Focus on Metal.
Thank you. And like I said, thanks for the support and everything you do, because without you, it's not going to happen.
All right, man. So we go, folks.
Keep it metal.
Richie Cavalera for you from Insight, and this is False Flag. Metalheads, that will do it for this week. I hope you enjoyed the interviews with Michael Angelo Badio, as well as Richie Cavalera from Insight. And remember, you can get a hold of Richie and the band at facebook.com/insightband. So that is a wrap for this week. Hopefully you think that we've kicked off May with a bang here on Focus on Metal, and we have got more great stuff to come as the month goes on. In the meantime, you can keep up with us at focusonmetal.net,
focusonmetal.blogspot.com. You can talk with Richie at our Facebook page, and also I'm always putting out what's going on Twitter. And if you feel like firing off an email, that would be scott@focusonmetal.net or richie@focusonmetal.net. So that's it. Ain't no more, at least for this week. So for myself, Richie, and everybody else here at Focus on Metal, as usual, have yourselves a good metal week. And until we talk to you again, remember,
focus on metal.
Everything else is insignificant.
Still here? It's over. Go home.